Before we get started, I wanted to thank the folks at Ambrosia Software again for sending over a copy of Wiretap Anywhere, which is what we're now using to produce the show. We were using another piece of software by Ambrosia called Wiretap Studio, which is fantastic, but we're spending a great deal of time exporting tracks and then importing them into GarageBand for tweaks and finishing and that kind of thing. So now that we're using Wiretap Anywhere, which is sort of a virtual patch bay, and it allows us to record from multiple sources directly into GarageBand on multiple tracks, we're spending a lot less time, and it's just a much better solution for what we're doing. So if you're doing a podcast yourself or you're thinking about doing a podcast, you might want to check out either Wiretap Studio or Wiretap Anywhere from Ambrosia Software. And you can find them at ambrosiasw.com. Also, we've just set up a new Amazon store at fadedandblurred.com. I would imagine that many, if not most of you, have ordered from Amazon at one point or another. And you know that they've got pretty much anything you could possibly want, and most often at the lowest prices. So we have set up a new Amazon store stocked with photography-related gear, books, bodies, lenses, flashes, accessories, all sorts of stuff. It doesn't cost you any extra. You get all of the same benefits of ordering through Amazon. You can use Prime. You can get new items, used items, all sorts of shipping options, anything that you would get ordering through Amazon.com. But we get a little portion of each sale that helps us keep the site up and running and growing. So if you're looking for gear or books or something, we'd sure appreciate it if you'd use the new Amazon store at fadedandblurred.com. Welcome to another episode of Q&A at F&B, the show where we sit down with creative professionals to discuss things like process, workflow, the art, and the business of making images. My name is Jeffrey Sidoris. About a year ago, a photographer friend of mine and I were talking about some of our current favorite photographers, and John Keatley was at the top of his list. And he was actually really surprised that I'd never heard of John or seen his work, which is not that surprising, actually, because there are a ton of great photographers that I've never heard of, and it's one of the reasons I love doing this show is that I get to talk to some of them and experience their work and listen to them speak about their work. Anyway, long story short, I have been a fan of John's ever since. His portraiture is engaging for reasons I can't really put my finger on. It's not all style and technique, though there's definitely style and technique present. It's a gesture. It's a glance. It's a half smile. Or maybe it's the dry sense of humor that he so often employs in his personal and professional work. Either way, he has become one of my favorite photographers, and I'm really excited that he is sitting down with us today. Sharing some of that passion about photography and about a new personal project that he's working on. So get comfortable and enjoy our interview with advertising and editorial portrait photographer, John Keatley.
I mean, my photography journey has been about 10 years now, and as with probably many photographers, I started off doing something completely different from what I'm doing now. I think it started out as just a general interest in photography, and basically I was just taking pictures of my friends and my life in college, and somebody noticed at a lab I was taking my film to. Somebody pulled me aside at the lab and just gave me some encouraging words and asked if I'd ever considered being a photographer, and that was pretty much when I decided that I was going to be a photographer, even though I didn't even know what that meant or what that looked like. It just sounded like that would be fun if you could get paid to take pictures.
Yeah.
So
it just, that seems kind of random that they would just choose your photos out of what was being produced. I mean, do you remember what photo in particular it was?
It was actually the last roll I was taking, because I went home to California for Christmas break, and my parents told me you cannot be shooting anymore because it's way too expensive. I mean, school was expensive, so it was basically the last roll of film I was going to shoot for a while. And there was some friends and I, we snuck onto a golf course one night and we rode like longboard skateboards down this really steep hill. And so we had pictures of that, and we had pictures of, like, you know, there were some night shots of people standing under street lamps and stuff like that. I mean, it's probably not anything that would stop you in your tracks if you saw it today, but for whatever reason, the lab manager who saw it, she thought she saw something that seemed different from, I guess, what she typically sees. And so, yeah, I'm extremely thankful that she said something to me. And that was really all it took right there. And just, wow. I think just that encouragement and just knowing that it's something that I could do, mm-hmm. I looked for every opportunity I could find from there on out, and never stopped pursuing it. So,
now, did you go through different types of photography before you sort of found your portrait style that you shoot now, or did you start with portraits?
No, I started just taking everything. I did some, you know, landscapes, and it didn't take long until I got my first job, and it was shooting for a university, and it was just kind of, you know, events and pictures of people around campus, and I did weddings and you know, whatever I could find. Pretty much, I took a lot of portraits of my friends, and the more I got into photography and the more I started researching, I started gravitating towards advertising, and I started discovering editorial portrait photographers, and I had never really seen or noticed anything like that before, but it immediately struck a chord with me. And so it took me several years to get to the point where I was trying to emulate some of that in my own work. And then it was probably maybe six years from when I first picked up a camera until I really started developing some of that style in my own portfolio.
Wow. So. And were there photographers that you were inspired by in terms of helping to kind of develop your style, or is this something that just sort of evolved out of the way you approach a particular project?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely photographers whose work I admire. One of the first portrait photographers I discovered was Dan Winters, who I think everybody's very familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
His portraits are, you know, really beautiful, and there's always something different about them that he brings. I looked a lot at Peter Yang's work and a lot at Chris Buck, who incorporates a lot of dry humor into his work, which I really appreciate. There's always been people who I have admired, but more so lately, I try to avoid looking at other people's work as much as possible, because I feel like it sometimes influences me in ways I don't want to be influenced. Sometimes it creates, you know, you start comparing yourself to other people. And so it's always good to get inspired, but I try to avoid always being looking around as much as possible. So.
Interesting. So is it almost a subconscious thing where you end up shooting something that's maybe not natively your style because it's been influenced by somebody else?
I think it's a number of things. I think one of the big things for me is it's easy to look at someone else's work and you can start beating yourself up, like, oh my gosh, it's such an awesome picture. Like, why didn't I do that? Or how come they got that? You know, like.
Right.
You know, photography being, it can be very isolating and it can be competitive. And so on one level, just that's one aspect that I try to guard myself against. I think that it's important to value your own work. And I know that the more you look at your work, the more I look at my work, at least, I can't speak for anyone else, but the more I see my work, I have to start just trusting that I know it's good. And at one time, I was really excited about, but you know, you see something day in and day out, it can lose its luster a little bit. So you could have a great portrait and you've seen it for, you know, 30 days in a row, and all of a sudden you see someone else's work for the first time and you start to think, ah, they're so much better than me, you know, or this and that. And so I think on some levels that's part of the reason I try to avoid always looking around. But yeah, also you want to be able to respond to your own ideas and thoughts and not be thinking, well, what would so-and-so do in this case, or, you know, I remember seeing a picture similar to this and it really worked well. You know, you don't want to be comparing your style to other people in that sense. So I just find that when I'm giving myself the space in my own mind to work with my own ideas, I tend to feel better about the work that I'm creating. So
You, especially in your personal projects, it seems you take advantage of your sense of humor, or your sense of humor comes out, I should say, in a lot of your personal projects. I'm thinking particularly of your Christmas card and Brown Town. Is it something that you're consciously trying to do, or does it just sort of, is that a result of the way you see things?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just a result of what I'm interested in. I really enjoy dry humor and unexpected things, and I find myself, I'm constantly just going about my daily life. I'm constantly saying to myself or people around me, you know, what if this happened, or you know what would have been really funny when that waiter came out to the table? I mean, things like that. For some reason, I have these little scenarios always playing out in my mind that aren't probably ever going to happen, but I just think that would be really funny if that did happen. So I think ultimately my personal work is just a response to what I'm interested in, what goes on in my mind. Even when it's funny or I mean, it's not necessarily, I didn't set out to say, okay, how could I take a funny picture?
Right.
It just tends to be what interests me the most, I think.
Do you keep any sort of running journal or notebook of ideas that you'd like to turn into shoots? I mean, do you document your life in that way?
I do. I have a pretty long Word file at this point with just all kinds of ideas and scenarios. And anytime something pops into my head, I write it down, because the chances of me being able to create everything that comes into my head as it comes in is pretty slim. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times what will happen is I'll get an assignment, or I'll find a person that I really want to photograph, or someone that I want to cast in a personal project, and I'll go back and reference my ideas, and sometimes something just clicks and you think, oh, okay, this idea that I had a year ago would be perfect now.
Right.
Other times there's ideas that you get and you just can't get out of your head, and I tend to produce those on the spot. But I would forget 80% of the stuff that I was interested in if I didn't write it down.
If you didn't write it down, nice.
Yeah.
We were talking a little bit before we started recording about how you approach some of your portraits, particularly client work. And you said something very interesting, and that was that you often have a very limited amount of time to photograph someone. And rather than attempting to make some sort of analysis or representation of their personality or who they might be, you often use them as a canvas of sorts to communicate either your own ideas or just your own aesthetic as to who they might be. Can you talk a little bit about that? Maybe elaborate on what you meant by that?
Sure. I mean, yeah, I think, I guess what I was saying was, a lot of times my work tends to be more a reflection on me, I think, than the person I'm photographing. And, a lot of times that, you know, people will ask, well, why do the people look so somber, or why aren't they expressive, or why are they looking to the side, or whatever it is. And I think that reflects my personality. I mean, I know I've photographed people who are very outgoing, but I tend to photograph them in a more calm, still way. And that's obviously not a reflection of them. It's just how I wanted to portray them. And sometimes it's just purely an aesthetic choice, but I think it goes back to just my vision of what I want to create, what I want the image to feel like, what sort of emotion I want people to take away from it. And, you know, I don't know, you hear people say sometimes, oh, you really, so the photographer really captured, you know, their subject or whatever. And I don't really go for that. Even if I had, you know, several days to spend with somebody, that doesn't mean that I really know them or what they're about. You can maybe capture subtle nuances or things, but you know, to really know somebody and to really capture a picture about them. I don't know that that's such an easy or even possible thing to do. So really, I feel like I have more of a vision and a passion that directs me to make the choices in my work that I do, and that rarely comes from the subject, I guess, mm-hmm. if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. As you gain more notoriety as a photographer, one of the things that comes along with that is the ability to shoot higher profile clients and maybe even, you know, larger budgets for concept shoots. But do you find that at this point in your career, there are less restrictions placed on you because of the body of work, or more restrictions because of the high profile nature of some of the clients that you shoot?
That's a tough question. I definitely see there's times where I feel like I'm given more flexibility and people trust me a little more now than when I was starting out earlier in my career. And I think naturally that probably just has to do with the fact that I have a body of work that I can point to. So certainly when you do really high profile assignments, people not only hire you for that, but they trust that you can recreate that for them. And but at the same time, whenever you're dealing with people of note or celebrities, there's always going to be difficulties that come up. It's never just a walk in the park. I remember when I first started out doing portraits years ago, and I would look at pictures in magazines, and I used to think to myself, when I'm photographing celebrities, then it's going to be easy. Then, you know, I'll have everything I need to work with. I think that I quickly found out that was not the case. It's actually maybe even more difficult when you're doing the high profile jobs, because time is money and there's a million other things someone would rather do usually than have their picture taken. So you really have to adapt and be quick and be smart and thoughtful in how you interact with people. And
Does the difficulty come more from the clients or celebrities themselves, or the team around them that's sort of handling them or in charge of their schedule or their you know, well-being or whereabouts or whatever?
Yeah, it just totally depends. A lot of times it's the person you're working with. And to be fair, I think celebrities often, you know, they have photo shoots several times a week, or, you know, maybe several in a day even. And it is hard work and often boring just sitting there in front of a camera, and you always have to be on. And so I understand that, you know, sometimes they just want to be done with it. They're not necessarily concerned with your vision. They don't really care that you might have a really great idea you want to do, because to them it's just another thing in their day. But there's other times where I've worked with some really great people, and they were just up for whatever. They thought they were having fun, and then there was that person with them or handler or someone that just was kind of on a trip, and they tried to make life as difficult as possible to speed things along and change things as much as they could. And it's tough. You never want to throw anyone under the bus, but
right,
trying to manage and soften those situations as much as possible is definitely a big part of the job. There's a lot of relational aspects and psychology that goes into photography beyond just taking pictures of people. So, I think, you know, it definitely just depends on the person and the situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you make it a point to go in with a concept, or do you ever go into a shoot and just kind of wing it and see where it goes?
If there's going to be a concept, typically, at least the way I work, typically it's something that's discussed beforehand and mm-hmm. planned out. I suppose it's kind of relative. When I photographed, you know, Annie Leibovitz, I had a very specific idea in mind. I don't know that I would call it a concept, but I definitely had a specific lighting style and pose and feel that I was after. That wasn't something that I had time to discuss or plan at all. It was just something I set up and hope to kind of work her into. But other projects I have where there's, you know, oftentimes it requires a set being built, and you never want to do something like that unless it's been well planned out
sure.
in advance. But even then, I've done projects that have been discussed where a lot of time and money was put into something, and then the day of or day before, someone decided, oh, I don't want to do that anymore, whatever. And so you definitely have to be ready for all sorts of things.
Very quickly go to plan B.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
So. You talked about it. Can we talk about Annie for just a second?
Sure.
You said something interesting that when you first found out that you were going to shoot her, you went through all sorts of feelings about how you were going to shoot her. And if you wouldn't mind talking about that, not because it's Annie Leibovitz, but the thought process that you kind of went through, because you had said that you were, you know, maybe I'll do an Annie Leibovitz type of shoot, but in the end, you created something that's very simple and very iconic. Can you talk a little bit about that process?
Yeah, I mean, getting an assignment like that is a thrill in of itself. So your first thought is, you know, this is a once in a lifetime type thing. So what are you going to do with it? Mm-hmm. And that can be a bit of it's a pressure situation. So I my first thought was, yeah, you know, I'll do a picture that looks like an Annie Leibovitz picture, and you know, it'll be, you know, very grand, maybe on a rooftop somewhere. And, you know, and thankfully I quickly realized that was a terrible idea for a number of reasons. But I mean, it wouldn't be doing justice to her or to myself as a photographer. And so the other part, which may have also guided me away from that, thankfully, was I quickly realized you can come up with any idea you want when you get an assignment, but it doesn't mean that you're going to get the chance to do that. So you have to work within reality as well. And I found out that we were going to be photographing her in a hotel room in between interviews, and she had a speaking engagement right after I was photographing her. And so we weren't going to have time to go anywhere, let mm-hmm. alone up to the roof mm-hmm. or set up, you know, the kind of setup we would need for something like that. And so I decided to just work within my constraints and do something simple rather than trying to do something grand or even trying to create a whole portfolio from her.
Right.
Just get one really great image. And a lot of times I know people say, well, I don't want to just do another head on seamless paper, but I love faces. I have this strange fascination and excitement about people's faces. And so to me, something as simple as a paper backdrop, I don't look at it as a boring paper backdrop. I look at it as a way to strip out frivolous, extraneous, distracting items and focus in on that face or that person. And so mm-hmm. that's why I decided to just do something simple like this, is because we would have a situation that would allow me to work in that. So I set up a little studio in a hotel room, and I, you know, was able to maximize the time that I had with her mm-hmm. instead of worrying about big concepts and props and things, and it led to what you see now. So.
But it's still very much, I mean, if I can use the term, a Keatley photograph. You know, it doesn't look out of place or look like it doesn't belong with the rest of your work. It very much fits the body of work that you've spent, you know, your career creating. So I think that in that respect, it is definitely still a concept shot because it's sort of your aesthetic that you've applied to it.
Thanks. Well, yeah, I mean, I appreciate that. I feel like, you know, and that's not something I would have probably achieved if I tried to do mm-hmm. something different or something in a style that looked like something she would take. I'm not her, obviously. So,
right.
It just doesn't make any sense to ever try to copy someone else's work, not only emulating someone else's work too much in your own, but also if you're photographing that person, like it just, it's not as clever as it might seem at first. So,
right. Sounds better on paper.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
You do a lot of personal projects, in between client work. How important are the personal projects to kind of your overall creativity, and do they keep you fresh because they're a challenge, or why do you focus so much on personal projects?
Personal work, it's become very important to me. I mean, I've always done. Everyone always does personal work, but for me, I've never to the extent that I have been doing it in the past year or so. And there's many, many reasons for doing it, but it keeps me extremely fresh. I mean, it helps me rediscover the reason that I love photography. Mm-hmm. These projects I've been producing over the last several months have been some of my favorite pictures that I've created, and there's no one over my shoulder telling me what I can or can't do. I'm able to take an idea and make it a reality, and so that's extremely gratifying and exciting. And the other side of that is it's also very beneficial in terms of, you know, your career as well, because I learned a little while ago that you'll get hired to shoot what you show. I think it's easy for a lot of people to, you'll take whatever jobs you can get at first, and you build a portfolio, and inevitably there's going to be some different type of photography that you want to do, but you haven't necessarily been doing it yet. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to think in your head, I know I can do this type of photography. I'm not doing it yet, but I know I can, and I really want to. And you think, oh, some photo editor or art buyer is going to see my potential, they'll see my talent, and they're going to give me a chance, they're going to give me that assignment, but it's not going to happen, because people aren't going to risk a lot of money on someone that hasn't ever done what that particular project is. And so if you don't self-produce, if you don't shoot personal work for yourself, that's also in line with what you want to shoot commercially, you're never going to get there. And so it's really, it's finding a balance. Well, and I wouldn't even say it's finding a balance. It's the most important thing is shooting exactly what you want to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully that's also commercially viable, but I think that any style is commercially viable. Now there may be a greater market for certain things over something else, but if you can do one thing and do it really great, and you actually are passionate about it and care about it, well, when a client needs that one thing done, who are they going to call? They're going to call the person that does it day and night with their eyes closed, and that's all they do. And so I think it's really important to specialize and to focus in on what you want to do, because then you can actually get paid to do what you want to do, and you're not frustrated because you're shooting X and Y, you know, half the time, and you know, it's spreading yourself too thin. So there's many, many, many reasons why I think it's important to do personal work. And it continues to challenge me and stretch me. And also things like, you know, just doing larger productions. If you want to do really big productions and maybe you've only done smaller editorial shoots, if you can incorporate larger productions into your personal work, that's only going to build up the fact that you can handle those types of things in your portfolio. And so, There's many reasons like that why I think it's really important for everyone to consider shooting more for themselves, and not just when they have time or, you know, every once in a while, but it should be something that really photographers do all the time.
Mm-hmm. You've just completed, speaking of larger scale productions, you've just completed what I think is your first video project, a self-promotional piece. Can we talk a little bit about that? Because it turned out really, really well.
Thanks. Yeah, absolutely.
The Woodsman, I think it's called.
Yeah, The Woodsman. How it came about, I recently signed up with a new rep, and they asked everyone on the roster to create a bio video as opposed to just writing a bio about yourself. And I've been doing more and more videos and interviews lately, and I've recently done several interview-type videos, and my first thought was, I don't want to do that again. I already have three or four of those. So I think going back to just personal work, the more I do it, the more ideas begin to flow into my mind, and the more I write them down on my list. And so I constantly have projects that I want to create and trying to find ways to create. So my first thought was, what if I do a video where I'm in it, but it's a story? What if I treat myself like a subject that I might be assigned to photograph? Mm-hmm. And so in kind of working with that idea, that's basically where it came from. And then I approached a couple of writers who I work with, and we had a brainstorming session, and we all brought several ideas. And I had one idea that led to a greater idea that they wrote down, and then we tweaked it together, and that's where the Woodsman came from. So I think it might sound funny for people who haven't seen it yet, but I think it really does say a lot about me and my personality, and I feel like the style that it was shot in represents the way that I like to photograph and show people. So I consider it a creative bio rather than a literal account of where I grew up and when I got my first camera.
Right, right, right. How difficult was it to step in front of the camera in more of a narrative role?
It wasn't really difficult. Not because I love the attention, but it seemed to make sense. If it's going to be a bio video, I think it did have to at least have me in it.
But in terms of acting, it seems like that would be a little stressful.
it is a little different being on the other side. I think the last couple of years I've been doing kind of odd family portraits of my family, and so I've slowly gotten used to being in front of the camera, at least for that. So that may have warmed me up a little bit, but it was fun, and especially in a project like this. I had a really amazing team that I worked with, and so it's a little less pressure when you're not trying to do everything by yourself.
Mm-hmm. You know, we've talked about that a little bit before we started, the importance of a team, and you're very clear that having a support team around you is a fantastic addition, and I would go so far as to say that it's a necessary addition to achieve a certain level of work. Is that true?
Yeah, I think so. I think with any business, you can't do everything on your own, and you shouldn't try to do everything on your own. But I think photographers, for a lot of reasons, some justifiable, but photographers feel they have to do everything on their own and try to do everything on their own, and it can stretch you too thin, I think, and it really can hold you back from you know, your potential if you do try to go about things that way.
Mm-hmm.
So I've found the more that I do this, it's important to form relationships with people that you trust, people who have similar goals and ideas, and people who have unique skills and abilities. And when you can work with within a team like that, the possibilities just become endless. You can achieve so much more.
Rather than sitting and trying to achieve it all on your own.
Exactly, right, yeah.
Yeah. Now, with the production of The Woodsman, I noticed that you used the same post-production people that you use for your still photography. Can you talk a little bit about when you decided to outsource post on your still work and what that's meant to you moving forward?
Yeah, I wouldn't say every year. It's not like something I put on my calendar, but it seems like every year for the last 4 or 5 years, I've constantly tried to step back and evaluate my work and my business and find new ways to improve and new ways to achieve my goals. And one of the things more recently that I decided was that I was doing all my own retouching up to about a year ago, and I did a decent job. I don't think anyone was complaining, but I felt like it wasn't to the level that I wanted it to be. I mean, essentially my work wasn't looking quite like I wanted it to look like. Mm-hmm. And there were ideas that I wasn't able to fully flesh out because I was basically limited by my own skills on Photoshop. So one of the things I decided was that I wanted to find a retoucher who could do better than I can do in retouching, but also whenever you can shed off, you know, certain responsibilities like that, it frees you up to do more of what typically you want to do, which for me is creating. And so now I have this really great relationship with a retoucher, and we know each other really well. We feed off of each other. He brings really great ideas to the table, and we're able to really collaborate. And he's a really skilled artist, and so I can tell him, this is what I want this to look like. And not only can he get there in a more direct path than I could, but he can do a much better job than I could too. Mm-hmm. So with retouching with all things, I think that it's really important and beneficial to find people like that you can collaborate with and help move your vision and your creative process along.
Mm-hmm. Have some of the conceptual things that you maybe wanted to put together but haven't been able to because of your own limitations, are you now able to put those kinds of things together? And are the concepts that you're coming up with more elaborate because you've got this team in your corner that can execute them?
Yeah, I mean, I think once you can kind of expand your mind to realize what's... I mean, basically, before, I knew what my limitations were, so I wasn't really letting myself think outside of my limitations.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I know pretty much anything is possible, without even really consciously trying to change it, I've found that my whole thought process has shifted. I've opened my mind up to a much greater realm of possibilities because I know that we can make anything happen.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, I would get a job from an art buyer and they'd have this really wild concept or something really grand. And I'll be honest, I was scared because I'm like, oh my God, I don't know how I'm going to make that happen. But now I'm at a point where you could come to me with any idea, no matter how ridiculous it seems. And I wouldn't even wonder or think to myself, can we do this? I'd just know, yeah, we can do that.
Mm-hmm.
And it would just be a matter of mapping out the best approach to take care of it. Mm-hmm. So that's a really exciting place to be. And you find, your ideas become large. Yeah, I guess to answer your other question, my ideas have become larger. I still love and appreciate simplicity, but I found that I'm definitely thinking on a larger scale than I used to.
Mm-hmm. You'd mentioned that doing The Woodsman has allowed you to kind of go in a different trajectory as well with regard to video and bringing concepts to... From almost a director's standpoint, or the person sort of behind it, still having a team of editors and camera people and lighting people and that kind of thing, is that something that you think you will now take your business in that direction using video and becoming more of a director in that sense?
Yeah, I certainly hope so. I'm really obviously I've been doing photography longer than video, but I love video. I love film and. I'm starting to realize as I open my mind up to different ideas, and as I embrace motion as a tool, for example, I had an idea several months ago that I was trying to work into a photo shoot, and it was hard to really find a way to make that idea read. Like it made sense, but I kept running into the idea of how are we going to show that? How is it going to translate to the viewer? And then eventually one night I just realized, this isn't a photo shoot. This is a video.
Mm.
This would be a perfect video, and that really excites me. I really like thinking about the possibilities now of working with photography and motion. And so, I think if you can get to a place where you are coming up with ideas, you're being creative, and you're able to direct those ideas and work with the team, it becomes possible to do both photography and motion. But again, if you're trying to do everything yourself, if you're a photographer and you try to think about learning how to run a camera and how to work in After Effects and how to, learn Final Cut and all those things and mix sound, that's very daunting and I think unrealistic to expect that a photographer would be able to do all that on their own. But if you can focus on the ideas and kind of producing them, making them a reality, I think that's a job description that I think is very realistic and very exciting for me.
Yeah.
So video is definitely something that I want to start working in addition to photography.
Now that you've completed a video project and you're kind of thinking in different terms, or at least starting to think in different terms, does this now inspire you to want to do personal video projects in the same way that you do personal photo projects?
Yeah, absolutely. I for me, just creating is what I enjoy. And so realizing that I have two different tools now to work with, video and photography, I think probably moving forward in my personal work, it's really just going to be coming up with an idea or a concept and deciding which medium it fits the best with. And rather than trying to force a photo shoot or say, okay, this week I'm going to do a video shoot, I'm getting to the point where I am, you know, equally excited about both and just view both as very different tools to work with. So I hope to do a lot of personal video projects, to answer your question.
Do you see yourself moving toward film in terms of being a filmmaker and maybe into features?
I don't know, to be honest. I haven't really thought that far into it. Right now I'm just really enjoying, you know, thinking about, you know, the new possibilities of video. And I do think, to some extent, in being realistic, I'm focusing more on shorts. You know, this little piece that I was just involved with, it was about a minute long. So I think realizing again, like, what's realistic, not trying to say, okay, I love video, now I'm going to make, a 90 minute piece that I'm going to submit to a film festival. I mean,
right.
I think it is important. I mean, it's okay to be ambitious, but at the same time, for me at least, I feel like it's important to be realistic, because I'm not interested in, you know, forgetting about photography, and I'm not trying to move away from it. And, you know, you could very easily get to a point where you try to do something too ambitious and you're forgetting about what got you here and the work that you do still need to be doing to make a living. And so I think it's going to be a balance as I progress through this. But it's definitely something I'm very excited about, and I'm not limiting myself in terms of what I'll do with it down the road. But I think it's just going to be one small step at a time.
Is using video and seeing things in motion seems to come pretty naturally for you. Does it seem that much different, or is it all ultimately just setting a scene and seeing what the camera can do and trying to tell a story?
I think ultimately the story and what you want to say is a place to start. And then if you break it down, I mean, I think it, in some senses, it is very similar to photography, because you have to work with ideas. Like, how do you convey this idea? And you're either doing it in one frame in a picture, or you're doing it through several frames in a video. And so they're different, but they're not at the same time. I guess to answer your question, I do kind of see things. I'm very visual, so it's hard for me to completely distinguish between the two sometimes, I guess.
No, that's great. I wonder if we could switch gears a little bit and talk about your involvement with Mir Bottles and your Liberia project.
Sure.
Do you want to give a little bit of background on how that came about and kind of what the entire project is?
Yeah, Mir Bottles, it's a water bottle company, and they, for every bottle they sell, they provide clean drinking water for one person for a year, basically. And they do that by digging clean water wells. It's a new company, and so this last January, they went to Liberia to fund their first two clean water well projects. And I was approached by Mir about photographing the wells and the whole project for, you know, advertising and marketing purposes, and to help just get the word out about the work that they're doing. And so I went to Liberia for about a little over a week, and there was a shot list, and it was an assignment. There were specific needs, but beyond that, I was given tremendous creative freedom and told basically take whatever, you know, photograph whatever you're interested in and just make great photographs. And there's not a lot more you can ask for in terms of an assignment. So right. While I documented the process and shot a lot of different things and portraits of people from Mir and things like that for marketing, I also was able to go around and just meet people and explore. And a lot of my personal work tended to be portraits of children. There's, I think, like eight children to every adult.
Wow.
In Liberia. And so there's just kids everywhere running around. And I was just really captivated by them and their personalities. And it also helped that there's always a large group of children just following you around anywhere you go with the camera because they all want to have their picture taken.
Wow. So there was no shortage of subjects.
No, absolutely not. In fact, a lot of times I felt you feel bad, but I had a team working with me, and I would have someone kind of gather everyone but the one person I wanted to photograph and take them off somewhere else and take pictures of everyone else. Otherwise, you'd want to take this portrait, and you have like 15 people jumping in front of your camera. And so
you're getting mobbed by children in Liberia.
Yeah. Usually you're trying to fight with one person to let them take, you know, let you photograph them. Now
it's
very different. All of a sudden you're trying to just get one as opposed to several. So it was a really incredible experience. And it was my first experience in Africa, and you know, definitely something that has been on my mind ever since I've been back. And
Yeah, it sounds like it's made just an enormous impact on you on a very personal level.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just seeing, it sounds so cliche, everybody wants to help Africa now, and there's great need over there, but I am a bit wary sometimes of every company and organization that has a cause over in Africa. I feel like sometimes it just becomes this clever marketing campaign or a sympathy sort of campaign. But there is great need over there, and there's amazing people that we met who have just given their entire lives to try to serve others and serve people who can't help themselves. And so it's hard not to want to be a part of something like that and not want to try to help in some way. And so, basically, aside from just being touched by what I experienced, the CEO of Mir Bottles and myself, we've got together, and since we've come back over the last 4 or 5 months, we've been slowly putting together a new company that we're going to be starting. And basically, without getting too specific, the company is it's going to be a corporation. It's not going to be a nonprofit, but 50% of all revenue is going to go to projects in Liberia. So we're going to be funding sustainable projects, not going to be giving gifts away. One of the things that I found
50%, over there is 50%,
50, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, our accountant is not too happy about that. Yeah. But I think it's a statement, and it's something that's possible. It's going to take hard work, but, you know, what worthwhile goal doesn't take hard work?
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's something that we're really, really passionate about and excited about. And it's that the people of Liberia and their situation is the whole reason we're starting this company. We're not starting this company because we necessarily are excited about selling this product or whatnot. And helping some people in Africa would be a great way to help get the word out.
Right.
The whole reason the company and the products exist are to help people of Liberia. And in the way that we're going to do that is we're not going to be just giving products away. We're going to be investing in programs and in infrastructure. And those programs won't go anywhere unless there are Liberian people working to create and sustain those projects. And so, for example, we will invest and help build a school and help fund the teachers, but nobody's going to get paid unless those teachers are working and teaching, unless the Liberian people are constructing the new schools. And so
you're creating an economy. Really?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And so, I could go on and on about it, but there's not a lot of opportunities over there. There's a lot of people who are just, would give anything for an opportunity, and there's just not that much opportunity. And the few businesses that exist in Liberia, they're foreign businesses. And so any of the money that goes in, it's sent back home out of Liberia. And
so nothing's staying in the country.
Nothing's staying in, exactly.
Wow.
And so it's this kind of, it's this cycle where even if Liberians try to, or are able to buy or purchase goods, it's just leaving. And so it's kind of this one-way funnel. And so I think really if we're going to see anything change over there, the children need to be educated, they need to be given opportunities, and there also needs to be opportunities to adults who want to make a difference. And that's really what we're excited about having a part in, because we often, as Americans, we go into situations like this and we think, oh, I could give a gift, I could give, you know, whatever it is. and I'll feel so good about myself, and it'll make such a difference. These people will be so happy if I give them a pair of shoes or whatever. But most gifts that are given, they're not fully appreciated. But also, a lot of those gifts are just sold. You could give somebody, a tool chest and think, oh, now they'll be able to go work and, you know, make a living for themselves. But probably about 75% of those people are going to sell that tool chest, and maybe they'll eat for a couple of days and they're back to where they started.
Wow.
So it's, that's part of the problem too, is there's a lot of people investing a lot of time and money into trying to help people, but they're just doing it in the form of gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if you imagine a child in America who's given gifts their entire life, everything is paid for until they're like 45 years old. And that's not a picture that we would, that anyone would think would be a great life. You know, we know that the qualities that probably that child would grow up with, the personality and
right.
the expectations.
Right.
And so it's funny to me that we try to fix serious problems with gift giving. And so, that's something that we're really adamant about avoiding, and really making sure that we don't just come up with some idea that sounds great. We come up with something that's going to be sustainable, and 10 years from now, we can look back and say, wow, this has really flourished, and it's really allowed these people to help themselves, as opposed to, oh, wow, you know, this sounded really great at the time, but it's actually created a larger problem
mm-hmm.
now, you know. So if we go in and do something like that, I mean, it's worthless. We might as well not have done anything at all. So
right.
we're really trying to find out ways that we can make a lasting difference and do it right, and not try to just stick Band-Aids on a big problem. So
that's an ambitious project, John.
Yeah, it's very ambitious. but I think it's definitely one that's worth fighting for. And there's definitely days where I feel overwhelmed and I feel like, oh, what am I doing? Like, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
But you just have to keep pressing on, and it's, I think it's important, you know, it's really important.
Will Liberia act as, I don't want to say a test bed, but in a sense, if the economy that you help create in Liberia works and flourishes, do you see this expanding into other countries in Africa or even beyond?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to start with, we are 100% focused on Liberia.
Mm-hmm.
That's, that is what we're going to put our time and energy into, but in however, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years from now, we would love to say, you know what, I mean, this thing is really rolling now. Like, there is an economy there, it's stable, and there's people being creative and people who are entrepreneurs and children are being educated. We would love to be able to take this business model and turn it and focus it somewhere else. And even in the meantime, we're not this... This is a business model that we would love for other people to copy.
Mm-hmm.
I would love for any corporation to be inspired or challenged and say, you know what, these guys are giving 50% of revenues, not just 1% of their profit
right, right.
away. Like, if we can really make this work with this model, I think it's going to put a lot of pressure on other companies who have these, you know, 1%, 1% of the profit or whatever it is. Programs that they use for their marketing, and
right.
and I hope that a lot of other people, you know, take on something similar. So
yeah, that's an important distinction: profit versus revenue.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, profit is liquid. You know, I mean, if your expenses go up, if you buy a new corporate headquarters, all of a sudden your profits could shrink,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
dramatically. You could still, if you have a program like 10% of your profits, even. You can still say, oh, we're giving 10% of our profits away, but all of a sudden that 10% became a lot smaller.
Right, $8.
And so, yeah, it really does become just what it becomes, nothing more than a marketing campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
by doing this 50% of revenue thing, you could buy, $200 product, let's say, and right off the bat, you know, $100 is going straight to the work that
wow.
we're doing. Liberia, it's
wow.
not, and so really what that does is it puts the pressure on us to run the business responsibly and work within these parameters. It doesn't give us this, freedom to say, well, we'll just do whatever we want, we'll work in the fanciest office building,
right,
or we'll
right.
do this and that, and then, you know, we'll just give whatever's left over. I mean, it really boils down to us making sure that it works, because the primary goal and concern is the work in Liberia. And so I think this model not only helps us achieve more, but it also acts as a it acts as protection, I guess, against, you know, greed. It acts as a protection against you know, frivolous spending,
right,
and all kinds of, you know, things that can come up in corporations. So
what are some of the responses that you've gotten from either investors, if there are any, or the business community at large that, that you've shared this with? I mean, are they with you, or are they saying, John, you're nuts?
Yeah, I mean, we've gotten an incredible response, and obviously we haven't put it out there a lot. This is one of the first interviews I've actually done where I'm really kind of going in, and I'm being vague about some things intentionally, but the conversations that we have had, and especially with investors, this seems to be something that people are really excited about. I think people want to be involved in something that's not just pretty on the outside. I think there's a lot of people who are ready to do something that's really going to make a difference, and not just for selfish reasons anymore. And so there's still a lot to be worked out, but it's been really encouraging, the response that we've gotten and the people who have approached us even and expressed an interest in being involved. So it's going to be really fun and exciting to see how it pans out and who becomes involved and what we're able to really do with this.
John, that's fantastic. That's really fantastic. Thanks. Now, will you be going back? I would imagine you would to Liberia as things get rolling.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the plan. We don't have a timeline just yet, but my hope would definitely be that I'll be back there soon. And I think we really want to tell a really rich story about what we're doing too. And so, film and photography and audio and writing and all kinds of art are going to be really important and a big aspect of what we do in terms of our marketing and how we communicate with people as well. So we're definitely going to be going back for video and photography projects and interviews and, you know, fact-finding missions and finding out more about what the needs are and helping, you know, create that infrastructure that we're setting out to do. So yeah, I'll definitely be back. And one exciting thing to think about is even, you know, thinking about getting to work with other photographers and other artists.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You know, like it's not something that I would have ever had a chance to necessarily think about before, but it definitely puts me on the other side of the table. So
no, it sounds like an incredible project that is just going to reach so many people and make so many people's lives better. I'd love to talk to you more about it. Maybe you can come back when you know, when the thing gets rolling.
Well, I really appreciate your interest, and it means a lot. So.
No, absolutely, it's my pleasure. You know, it's inspiring to see someone turn a professional passion into such a personal project that obviously means a great deal to you. So, thank you for coming on and sharing it.
Of course, yeah. Thank you for having me.
Where should we point people to find out more about you?
Well, if people are interested in seeing more of my work, they could go to my website, which is keatleyphoto.com. My blog lives on that site as well. And then from there, if they want, they can interact, follow me on Twitter and Facebook, and I have links to both of those on my website. So the best place to go would be my website.
Okay. And you're a pretty active blogger. I mean, you update pretty regularly.
I try to, yeah. I'm trying to become more casual about it to allow myself to post a little more frequently rather than waiting, you know, to make everything a big release. But I find I'm probably blogging 5 to maybe 6 times a month, so maybe a little more than once a week. And I try to respond to everybody on Twitter and be pretty active. So I think it's a fun and important part of marketing and being an artist and just communicating ideas and showing work. So yeah, I'm definitely try to stay active with all of that.
John, thanks so much for taking the time to come on and talk about your work and about this fantastic Liberia project. I'd love to have you back and talk more about it when you kind of take the wraps off of it. And I would imagine you're going to be posting things on your blog as they become available.
Absolutely, yeah. It's hard. I wish I could show and tell so much more, but once we get to a point where there's more to show, I'll definitely be using my blog as a place to communicate those things.
And that's going to do it for this episode of Q&A at F&B. I don't know about you, but passion like that is absolutely inspiring to me. And I'd like to thank John Keatley again for coming on and being so generous with his time. If you'd like to find out more about John or check out his portfolio, you can find him at keatleyphoto.com. While you're there, be sure to check out his blog, where you'll find, among other things, the newly completed self-promotional video piece that we talked about, The Woodsman, which is very cool. So check that out. If you enjoy the podcast, why not head over to the iTunes Music Store and leave us a rating or a short review? We appreciate it. And for more editorials, video tutorials, reviews, and even more interviews, you can find us at fadedandblurred.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.